Welcome to Women in Translation, an audio series showcasing the richness of European women authors, translators, and more.
In this episode, host Joe Williams speaks with Swedish author and journalist Marit Kapla, focusing on her book, Osebol. Joe began by asking Marit to introduce herself.
Yes, hi. It's great to be talking to you, Joe. I worked as a newspaper journalist in the beginning of the 90s in the part of Sweden where I come from. But I moved to Gothenburg and I worked for 10 years with the International Film Festival as the artistic director. But then I started to freelance again as a writer and I started to work on my first book. And I knew immediately that it should be about my village, the village where I grew up in the countryside of Sweden, close to the border to Norway. So it's not very far up north, but it's very rural and there's a lot of forest in this neighborhood. So I made my first book out of interviews with the villagers, the people living in Osebol now. And it was such a great experience, so I wanted to write more books. So I just came out with my second book called Love in Swedish, Kärlek på svenska, which is a cooperation with a filmmaker, actually. So he made a film interviewing people about love, and I made a book based on the same interviews. So I didn't do the interviews myself this time. And one thing I would like to add also important is that I am inspired by Svetlana Alexievich, the Belarusian writer and Nobel Prize winner. And if you have read her, you know that she interviews a lot of people for every book. And so I was very intrigued by the possibility of interviewing a lot of people about the same thing and also presenting the text in like first person, so the person says, speaks to you saying, I did this, I did that, I think this. And it's a very close encounter, I think, she has managed to conceive in her form. So I was very inspired by that. And I wanted the reader of Osebol and Love in Swedish to also feel that they meet the person in the same way as I or the person interviewing meet this person.
I'll just mention to our readers then that Osebol is available now in English translation by Peter Graves on Allen Lane. And Love in Swedish is currently only available in Swedish, but hopefully we'll see an English translation of that soon. I'm very interested to hear that this was also a kind of multimedia disciplinary project with a filmmaker. I wasn't aware of that. And we can talk about that later. But first of all, let's talk a little bit more about Osebol. And you touched upon the formal aspects of the book, and it's something quite original, quite innovative, and not necessarily a form which we commonly encounter. Could you explain a little bit more about your reasons for wanting to use that form? What advantages do you think it offers, and what kind of effect can it have on a reader?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Maybe I should read the first four lines of the book. So this is the first page. Read it in Swedish. So in Swedish it sounds like this. Det ska jag tala om för dig att mitt liv har varit som Värmland. Berg och dalar. Det har gått upp och ner. And at the bottom of the page it says who is saying this, and it's Åke Axelsson, born in 1947. And in English, it sounds like this. In Peter Graves' translation, Åke Axelsson is saying, let me tell you something. My life has been like Värmland. Mountains and valleys. It's had its ups and its downs. And so it looks like a poem. That's the only thing that is printed on the page, and the book continues like that. That was a form that I invented as I went along, because at first I wanted to copy Svetlana Alexievich exactly. So I thought she's a great writer. I'll just do like she does. But she's writing in prose. So her books looks like usual novels or yeah. But when I published a text in a cultural journal based on three of my interviews, I read it out loud at the release of this journal. And then I read it like this, slowly, and because I wanted people to understand how amazing all the amazing things that this woman who I had interviewed, what she said, and it was so funny and interesting. And so I read it like poetry. And then another writer suggested to me that I should print the text also like poetry. And I immediately felt that this was the way, this was the form, the ideal form for this book. So I have not added, this is what they told me. But of course, I have taken away a lot of words, but I haven't added any word. And I took away a lot, but when I decided to keep like this part of the interview, I wanted it to be almost exactly in print as when they said it to me, because I think there are so fascinating things in spoken language. Spoken language contains things that are hard to transmit to a book page, but it's so interesting. It's so much information in how you say things, not only what you say, but also how you say it. And I wanted to keep that. With sentences that are broken off, you know, half sentences, repetitions, and things like that. When people are stopping and being silent for a while. And if you print the text as a poem, you can use those things more. And it helps me. It helped me to make the reader really understand what I did here in the interviews. I wanted desperately the reader to hear the same things as I heard.
So your intention is to try and reproduce some of the aesthetic effects that you felt, that you experienced when you were interviewing people, and you're trying to transpose some of those onto the printed page. Mm. Okay, that's a really fascinating idea because, yeah, I think spoken language is always full of sometimes unintentional poetry, but genuinely startling use of language, which, yeah, like you say, can be difficult to reproduce in a piece of written literature. I think sometimes you see authors, writers sometimes struggling with dialogue and trying to make dialogue sound kind of naturalistic and dangerous, and it's sometimes not really working, but... Yeah, I can see the merit and can see the value of you seeking to reproduce some of that poetry of spoken language on the page. So on that subject, maybe we could hear some more from the book from Ursula. So perhaps you could read something in the original Swedish so we can hear how it sounds, and then we'll hear a corresponding English language section.
I have five pages opening the book. It's the overture of an opera. Five pages where people speaks about the landscape and the surroundings and the village. And then in the book, you meet the villagers one by one or two. Maybe we are walking from house to house and meeting the people living in these houses. So maybe I could just continue in Swedish on page two of the opening. And sometimes when I read out the text, I read the name of the person speaking first. I think it's very important that everyone understands who is talking now. So it's not the village talking. The book is made up of individuals, and I think that's very important. So Lars Jolén, 1946. Till 2021. Vi kom hit med flyttlasset. Jag och en polare åkte i lastbilen och Tina och barnen åkte i vanliga bilen. När vi kom in på gården var det 2-3 grader kallt. Det var i slutet på september eller början av oktober. Det var precis innan älgjakten. Vintergatan var som en stjärnbarriär över himlen. Jag hade ett hum i öronen hela tiden. Hör ni det också? Sa jag och gick ut, för vi hade elmätaren på en stolpe med massledningar och grejer. Så till slut kom jag på. Det är tystnaden jag hör, som jag inte hade hört på 20 år i Stockholm. Anna-Karin Larsson, född 1972. Jag tror man uppskattar det om man har varit härifrån mer. Jag kan också se att det är fint somliga dagar, men annars så, för mig är det bara en jäkla dalgång, ungefär. Ingrid Sarnefors, född 1965. Jag stod på Klara strand, på övervåningen strött. Jag såg en lax som simmade där, precis under vattenytan. So that was the first 5 pages, including the one I read at the beginning.
Let me tell you something. My life has been like Värmland, mountains and valleys. It's had its ups and its downs. We moved here with everything we owned. Me and a mate came in the lorry, and Tina and the children in the ordinary car. It was 2 or 3 degrees below zero when we arrived at the house. It was at the beginning of September or the beginning of October, just before the start of the elk hunting season. The Milky Way lay like a starry barrier across the sky. I had this buzz in my ears all the time. Can't you hear it too? I said and went outside, where our electric meter was on a pole, with a load of overhead wires and the like. Then eventually I realized what I was hearing was silence, something I hadn't heard for 20 years in Stockholm. I think you appreciate it more the longer you've been away. I can see there are days when it's magnificent, but otherwise, for me, it's just a bloody valley, sort of. Looking out of the upstairs window at Klara strand, I saw a salmon swimming just below the surface.
Thank you to Marit Kapler reading the first 5 pages from her book Ossobola, available in English translation on Allen Lane, translated by Groves. Thanks for your reading. So can I ask you then, what do you think is the significance of the lives of the people in this village to somebody from the outside, to an English language reader, for instance? Obviously, this book is not intended to solely speak to people from this village who have a personal relationship with the village and the people in it. What do you think is important, and what do you think this kind of work has to say to a wider readership?
Yeah, so I wanted to write this book because I felt that every time the countryside is like portrayed in mostly in national media in Sweden, it's full of stereotypes and misunderstandings. And I couldn't recognize the place I come from in these stories. So I wanted to set things straight. I wanted people to really understand what it's like to live in a village like this. It's that life is so much richer than people might think. And it's exciting to live in a village. Life is fantastic and exciting everywhere, I think. And people are also very different from one another in a village as they are in a city. So a village is made up of individuals, just as a city is made up of individuals. So I wanted to write about that, and I borrowed the form from Svetlana Alexievich. I felt that was the right thing for me to do, because she was also a journalist when she started out her career, and I have been making a lot of interviews, so that's something I can do. So I felt that this is the form I should choose, and the book will be the most interesting way to tell about Ossebol would be to interview the people living there now. It will not be me remembering when I grew up in Ossebol, because I moved to Gothenburg 24 years ago. That would be an old story about Osebol, but I wanted to write the new story about Osebol. And I wanted it to be written in a way that everyone would like to read it. So it was very important for me to choose a form that would appeal to people and that would make it easy for people to understand what life in Osebol is like now. And people talking about their lives, many people find that interesting. I just took away like the transportion. In Swedish we say in a book there can be a sense of transportion. You just need to get from point A to point B. But I wanted to take away all those maybe boring parts. I wanted it only to include the most important things that people told me from their lives. So it's the people in Osebol. This is a village. It's very small. I interviewed almost everyone living there over the age of 18. So it's about 40 grown-up people, persons living in Osebol now, and maybe 10 to 15 kids. And it used to be bigger. There used to be a lot of more people living there. And the men used to work in the forest. They were lumber workers. So when this industry was automated, when machines started doing the work, they all were laid off. There was no work anymore for them. People have been moving from these parts of Sweden into the cities. As everywhere, like in fishing villages, fishing was also made by, it didn't take many men to do the fishing anymore, or the farming, or the lumbering. It's the same story globally, everywhere, like automation, I don't know the English word, but machines has been taking over. And so this is the same in India or in the UK. So this story is happening everywhere. And then many people with like strong family ties to these places, they don't want to move. And in Sweden has had a very strong, the state has been facilitating for people to move, not taking so much, not considering that people didn't want to move, but it's been like a subtext of you should move to where you can find work. If you cannot find work where you are born, tough luck, you just have to move. and I think that's not fair to people. People are not machines. People are human beings with feelings and strong feelings for the place you were born and where your family comes from. So I think, and there is, even though many people moved, many people have a feeling of they are missing a place. That's what people have told me when I published Osebol and I traveled in Sweden. People from the cities, they came up to me and said that your book makes me remember the village where my parents came from or my grandparents or maybe another small place that they have strong connections to. So there's a longing, and I think I think it's important to talk about this longing, because in the age of what Sigmund Bauman calls retrotopia, like where politicians are using a feeling of longing for a place that never existed, there is actually a longing for a place that did exist. And I think it's important to remember that. There was a village. Osebol had, like in the 60s, Osebol had 120 grown-up people living in Osebol instead of 40. So there has been a huge depopulation. And the oldest people in Osebol, they remember when the village was a completely different place. And it was a different place even when I lived there. I'm 52 now, so I grew up in the 70s. I was a child in the 70s and I was a teenager in the 80s. And I remember all these people, even if the population had started to diminish and there were fewer people, pupils in the school. I remember a quite lively village, after all. And it's a different thing now when I returned. But also, people have been moving into Osebol from other places and countries. And I think that's very interesting. People are moving, they are buying houses for recreation, like holiday houses, but also they are leaving, for instance, countries like Poland or Latvia or Georgia to move to Sweden and places like Åsebo to find a new future. And so I think urban life in other places in Europe, as it well mostly, cannot offer what people are looking for, something else. And they find that in Åsebo. So that's another interesting thing that's happening now.
Thank you. I just wanted to touch on a couple of things then. And you've actually kind of, you know, touched on these yourself actually in your answer just then. But I know you said at the beginning you wanted to write this book partly motivated by desire to kind of offer a more nuanced and more detailed counterpoint to sort of the stereotypes and reductive representations of the Swedish countryside that are commonly encountered in mainstream media. And so, even in that, even in light of that, after completing the book and reading the book, do you think there are any kind of commonalities or collective attitudes that are commonly expressed by people that you met in Åsebo? Are there any desires, attitudes which a lot of people share? And you've kind of touched on some of this in your previous answer, that there's a sense of longing and there's a sense of loss, perhaps, for a way of life and a family unit and a place, a geographical location. Is there anything else that you find was kind of shared or constitute any kind of collective kind of worldview or attitude amongst the people in Åsebo?
Yeah, what I discovered when I had completed the book was that it provided, what it really did was to provide a view of the world from the horizon of Åsebo. Because that's what, even though people are very different and they have very different backgrounds and views on specific issues, they are all speaking from the from Åsebo, from this particular place. And that's not very common, I think, that you get a view from the world from a small place like this. And you can also see when they speak, they are very aware. They are very much aware of that they are speaking from a place that is considered to be not important. People in power, they barely know that these kind of places exist, and they never visit. They have no idea what it's like to live in a place like this. And that's the common thing. And that's, I think that's very sad, how painfully aware everyone is about how insignificant the rest of the world think that Åsebo is. I think that's so sad. And it makes me so angry. And because, like I said, life is so rich and interesting in Åsebo as well, just like anywhere else. So I think that's the... But when it comes to specific issues, people have very different opinions. For instance, about the wolf. The wolf has been threatened with extinction in Sweden. So you cannot hunt wolf like you want to. And that's a very sensitive political issue, because the wolf has been growing in population in recent years, and it's now killing like the dogs, the hunting dogs, for instance. And of course that happens to people living in the countryside and not people living in the city. So it's been, but people in Åsebo have very different opinions about, should the wolf be extinct by humans? Are we done with the wolf? Or should we try to preserve the wolf? That you will find people with very different opinions about this in my book. But when it comes to looking at the world and being aware of how the outside world looks upon Åsebo, there everyone have the same opinion. They are very aware of that Åsebo is not considered to be the center of the universe for other people, but to the people in Åsebo, it is the center of the universe. And so I want to, I hope it can empower every small place, I think, and for people to be proud of wherever they live, even if other people think that it's an insignificant place.
On a sort of similar subject, but from a different perspective, from a more aesthetic or poetic perspective, Do you recognise any kind of singular poetic voice coming out of Oshobol? Because you've arranged a lot of this speech, a lot of this dialogue, a lot of these interview responses as poems. And if you were to read that book, Oshobol, as a book of poetry, do you think it would sound like a coherent poetic voice? Have you tried to edit it in such a way that it feels like a coherent poetic voice? Or is it more like a polyphony? Is it more like a kind of diverse array of voices?
I think I have tried to arrange it as close to the individual voice as possible. So more like a polyphonic work, absolutely. I have not tried to conform the people's words and voices. I've tried to make the opposite. But other people have told me that they think that I have automatically added my own voice, or like when I have edited, of course, you have a lot of power as the editor. I'm the writer / editor of the book, and so I think. But for instance, if I would compare with Studs Terkel, maybe you're familiar with Studs Terkel. No, he is an American writer, and he interviewed a lot of people in Chicago and in the United States, writing also polyphonic works. And he tries to preserve the way the person speaks even more, I think, than an Alexievich. But I cannot read Russian, so I haven't read Alexievich in original language, but she has a very good translator into Swedish, Sten. And to me, it's Svetlana Alexievich also is adding her own voice in a way, in a like mysterious way. But I think it's very important ideologically that I am not trying to write myself over these persons' voices. I think every individual voice is very important, and yeah, I try to make them come forward as much as I can. So it's a polyphonic work, I think.
So we're getting towards the end. So before we go, let's definitely talk some about your most recent book, which develops on this idea and this form you've got about capturing voices from everyday Swedish people. So could you explain in a little bit more detail then how this book resembles and how it differs to and what your intention with the book is?
Yeah, so in Oshobol there are 42 people speaking, and in Love in Swedish there are 31 persons speaking, and the main difference is then that I didn't make the interviews myself for Love in Swedish, so it's part of an artistic research project and headed by my colleague Staffan Julien. He's a Swedish documentary filmmaker. And we met through our mutual interest for Svetlana Alexievich. He made a film together with her in 2017. He followed her in Belarus, mainly where she interviews people about love, because one of the books she's working with is a book about love. And the deal between them was that he would film the interviews and make a film all totally independently, and they could then compare, because she had the same material but for her book. But now she's writing about the political situation in Belarus and Ukraine, so she hasn't finished the book about love yet. But he continued with this artistic research project and also making a film called, the first film was called Lyubov, Love in Russian. And now he has made Love in Swedish. And he made the interviews himself. And along the way, I came up with the idea that I could make a book out of his interviews. It was also a bit affected by the pandemic, because I wanted to do another book, but it was so difficult meeting people and interviewing them. So he had already made a lot of interviews. And this was a very interesting experience. So I've been listening to talking to what we can call ordinary people, or people who are not like official. They have no official like status in society. They are not speaking publicly. So they are not very used to being interviewed. And I think it's very important to interview people like them. And it's also it's so interesting and fascinating, and people can say the most astonishing things, and of course, and but you should also, it's also very important how you deal with these interviews. You must treat them with a lot of care, and I always let the people read what I want to print so they can approve. But so in the Love in Swedish book, very different people again speak about their experiences about love. And so you have stories, you have heartbreaking stories about losing someone you love or living in a very long marriage, like over 50 years, and how you cope with the problems that can occur and how you make it last for such a long time. You have stories about the difficulties in meeting someone new or having a loveless parent, having a parent who cannot express love at all. Or there's so much, for every person, there's a new story or several new stories. So again, I decided to include everyone that was interviewed in the book. So it became, so Osebol is about 800 pages, but it's poetry, so it's not like fully printed pages. And Love in Swedish is 600 pages, it turned out to be. And I think it's so worth it to read all those pages because I have been learning so much about love from the people that Staffan interviewed. And I cannot really say more. I've learned that love is hard and you have to put in an effort, and everyone is fighting with or dealing with that every day. And it's very important to try to speak more about those things and also speak about loneliness, the lack of love also. And I hope that this book, and I know Staffan also thinks that the book and the film will be like the opening of a conversation that people will bring into their own lives. And of course, it's also very interesting to compare his film with my book. We decided to not take part of each other's work until we were finished with our own work. Yeah, you can see then that we made different choices, but some parts are very much the same and some parts are very different. Yeah, it's something that we will continue to speak about in the next year.
Oh, great, that sounds lovely. Hopefully we can see an English translation of that at some point in the future. Thank you very much for taking the time to share your work with us. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. Likewise, Joe. It was very nice to be on Trafika Europe.
This has been Swedish author Marit Kapla focusing on her book Osebol. And we've heard an excerpt from his work performed by Bailey Wolf. Osebol has been translated into English by Peter Graves and is available in the UK from Alan Lynn.
Women in Translation is an audio series showcasing the richness of European women authors, translators, and more. This series is executive produced by Trafika Europe Radio. Please sign up at our site to stay informed about upcoming shows. Thanks for listening.